And if you build a business around something that is important to you and hinges on skills that you excel at and or that you can bring in partners to kind of flesh that out, you're in a much better place, right?
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Hey, this is Carla, and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. So today is kind of a pretty special episode because I'm going to record a two-part episode. First one, I will be sharing my personal insights about the unsexy and ugly parts of entrepreneurship. And then for the second part, I have a very special guest for you who is a good friend of mine, and she is a coach to 7- and 8-figure founders. And she helps them live a life but with intention, by design, while also growing their company and really just keeping the peace in the home in terms of operations, growth, and business. So the reason why I chose this topic for our discussion today is Alex, basically the guest from the second part of the show, she and I had talked about what are kind of like the downsides or the not so pretty parts of entrepreneurship. And we talked about how we get over those parts. What are the most difficult parts? What are kind of the most common misconceptions about starting a business? But I also wanted to start this episode by sharing a few of the parts that I really hate about business, but I also just know are pretty needed. Actually, you cannot avoid these things. So I have a list here of 6 items. And for each ugly part or unsexy part, I am going to share one lesson of mine. So the first one is firing. Firing is super ugly because you're going to let someone go. You're going to tell them, you know, they are out. They're not part of your team anymore. And if they are a breadwinner, or if they are basically providing for, you know, their children, then it's definitely a very difficult conversation to have. So my one tip for this one would be, if you have a teammate that is obviously underperforming, then you have given them enough chances, you've coached them, you asked them what else they need, and you've given them all the support that they deserve, but they still haven't, you know, figured it out. You have to give yourself grace, and you really have to let that person go. Also, in my opinion, 2 weeks is a good time to determine if someone would change and if someone would also make these changes very visible. So if someone had a communication issue, then 2 weeks is more than enough to see if they have changed. So I have given myself too much time. I've given people too many chances. And honestly, I regret it. But also, you know, you learn and you learn. So also, I wanted to share that the more that you keep these kind of bad employees or bad teammates, the more that it illustrates an insult to the people who are working for you who are really doing their job well, who are awesome at what they do. So you don't really want to break their heart in that way. So the best way for you is to really let that person go and kind of show them and reiterate what kind of standards you have for your team. Other ugly part is moving. Moving offices is not easy. Moving to another country is not easy. Any transition to changing your business structure, you know, it's not easy. It is a lot of paperwork and it's tedious, it's tiring, and it's just a lot of work. So my advice for this one is talk to as many people as possible and pay for advice. Stop Googling, stop trying to visit forums, Reddit boards, trying to get advice. Pay someone who knows what they're doing and ask for custom advice. That would be the best way to go about any huge move that you are going to undergo in your business. Now, the next ugly part is bookkeeping. I can only think of very few people, probably from only one hand, number of fingers in one hand, who genuinely love bookkeeping. So it's funny because when I was in college, I remember my bookkeeping teacher saying that, oh, you know, I love bookkeeping because I feel like I'm Nancy Drew. I'm looking for all of these clues and I piece them all together. And she was really genuine in how she felt about bookkeeping. And I always go back to that moment and I'm like, oh my gosh. On one side, I always think like, what a nerd. But on the other side, I also think, you know what? Good for her. At the end of the day, she's doing what she loves. So for bookkeeping, my main advice for business owners would be to learn it, to really understand it. There are so many workshops that are kind of like accounting for non-accountants or like basic bookkeeping. Really learn it. Maybe you can even take a super affordable Udemy course about it. So as long as you understand your books, that would be the best, especially if you're the business owner. The next ugly part is paying taxes. So paying taxes is so annoying. If only there's a way to not pay taxes. Actually, there are ways, you know, there are legal ways. There are very creative legal ways to not pay taxes. Of course, it has to be very custom to your situation. For me, I am a resident in Mexico, a citizen of the Philippines, and I own a US LLC. And so also with my recent marriage, I'm about to get a US residency. So it's definitely a pretty special situation. And I also paid for the best advice. And I have also really looked at my books to really see what makes sense. You know, that bookkeeping skill definitely was put into good use, and find ways to creatively and legally make your taxes lower. So learn as much as you can, ask questions. I actually recently learned that I don't have to pay my taxes in one go. I can have some sort of a payment plan or something. So I didn't ask, and I honestly felt stupid when I asked it. I'm like, I told my tax preparer, hey, I have a stupid question, but I was making a joke about the taxes that I'm going to pay, and it was pretty high. And I said, do you have a payment plan or can I pay in installments? And she said, you know what? There's actually a way to do that, you know? And then I'm so grateful to myself that with my crazy mind and my brave mouth, I was able to just ask that question. So the next ugly and unsexy part of entrepreneurship that I want to talk about is closing a business. So this one really hurts, but if it's time, it's time. If you're not making any money, if you don't feel like you have enough energy in you to keep things going, if you're kind of out of ideas, then maybe it's time to part ways with your business. And so before closing, my advice would just be try to see if you can sell it, even for a discount, or if you can explore a strategic partnership that can help it grow. If you're actually really closing, talk to a lawyer and make sure you got all bases covered. Closing a business also incurs cost. Sometimes it's actually more difficult than starting a business. I know for sure it is the case in the Philippines, closing a business. If you don't file all of the papers properly, even if you have ceased your operations and closed your office, you could still have a penalty So that's definitely something to rely to our experts and something that you need to just plan properly. So the last thing that I want to discuss is betrayals. This is probably the ugliest part and the most unsexy part of entrepreneurship. I have definitely been betrayed many, many times in business. And sometimes, you know, I'm not going to say that I lose hope, but sometimes I would have these thoughts of, you know what, if I was an employee or if I had a regular life, I would not have to experience this kind of heartbreak. But, you know, it hurts. But just as with any betrayal in your life, you know, a spouse, a partner, even your sibling, even this random street seller that didn't give you the right change, it hurts you. It's a blow to your ego and it hurts your feelings because they make you think that you're not deserving of honesty or credit. So my advice is if you're going through something similar, look inward and look within yourself and consistently ask yourself if you are doing and or if you have done the right thing, and always choose to do the right thing. Sometimes revenge sounds so good in your head, or if sometimes you're tempted to do something bad or negative in the business and you want to sabotage it because it's not gonna, you know, the profit's not gonna go to you anyway or whatever, but always think about the values that you have, and who you are in that moment defines what kind of entrepreneur you will be. So always choose to do the right thing. And always remember that a moment of betrayal is just a moment. It's temporary. There are so many people who love you, who are honest to you, and who have your back. And just focus on those people. Also try to help them, make them grow. If you can help them with your business, much, much better. You might get clients that way. That was pretty heavy. And this is just, I don't know, the first 10 minutes. But I'm super happy to be here. I'm super happy to be discussing this with you guys. The next part of this show is with Alex Snyder, and she's an awesome, awesome human being. So definitely give it a listen and let me know what you think in the replies or in the comments. Thank you so much, and I'll see you soon. All right. Good morning. And this is Carla once again. Welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. And today is actually a very, very None of Your Business day and None of Your Business episode, because I have a super special topic with a good friend of mine. And we are going to talk about basically the unsexy parts of entrepreneurship. And these are, you know, some of the kind of backstage conversations that other entrepreneurs and I always talk about when we're just like, you know, hanging out at a random cafe, or when we're having a heart to heart at a little corner in a mastermind, we start opening up. And these are actually some of the conversations that we're always having. We keep on repeating almost, and maybe it's time to talk about it. So I invited a friend of mine. Her name is Alex. I love that name, obviously. Alex is a strategic growth and leadership consultant who assists 7- and 8-figure founders in conquering their next level of business growth by gaining clarity on their vision and refining strategic decisions into actionable priorities in terms or in realms of team growth, operational optimization, and sustainable business development. So her tailored approach actually empowers entrepreneurs to achieve profitable growth while also stepping confidently into their zone of genius. And not only that, she also helps foster an engaged, self-sufficient team that delivers consistent results without micromanagement. I'm totally all about that being in outsourcing. So Alex, welcome. How are you today?
Thank you, Carla. Thank you for having me. I love that you framed this as a chat, because the first time you and I met, we chatted for hours about these kinds of things. And yeah, I am a huge fan of outsourcing and specialized team members. Definitely, you know, fractional team members, all kinds of things. So I love that. We have a lot in common there. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm
I definitely, I love your background too, because, you know, you and I come from very different places, very different backgrounds, very different culture even, right? And so, but we both made the decision to be an entrepreneur, and obviously it's been, I don't know, the Wizard of Oz, basically. So, tell us your story and how did you get started with, entrepreneurship?
Oh, I will try to give you the condensed version because it feels like a bit of a like epic journey.
Right.
I like to start with growing up as an athlete because, you know, they say hindsight's 20/20, and looking back, I understand now just how much that shaped me and some of the, I guess, key characteristics I developed then that ultimately were found like fundamental in me becoming a successful entrepreneur. So I actually grew up as an athlete. It really, really trained my strategic thinking, my analytical thinking, my ability to kind of hold scenarios in my mind and adjust in a given moment based on, you know, what's in front of you, literally maybe on a field, or data later on, or people and stakeholders in front of you, you know. So that was where I was going. It also really developed my discipline and my ability to create routine and habits to support my success. And I, you know, was in a sport that my family wasn't necessarily financially equipped to support. So I also became very resourceful. You know, I found ways to create opportunity. I, you know, was, you know, at the, I, so I did equestrian, which is horse jumping for those who don't know. And so I think around the time I was 12, I started getting dropped off there every morning at like 6 a.m. instead of going to summer camp. My parents worked, so I had to go somewhere. And I just started being around, supporting, helping, working for free, but also just being really willing to help other people. And, you know, obviously had probably some innate ability, but also I had grown up in the country. So I learned to ride when I learned to walk, which meant, you know, I had a leg up, right? We talk about 10,000 hours. Like, I had a lot of hours under my belt by that point. And I really had Olympic aspirations. I had Team Canada aspirations. I was occasionally getting opportunities to train with, and I was definitely in the ring competing with Team Canada athletes. And unfortunately, it all came to a bit of a grinding halt due to some family circumstance. And you know, obviously, in the moment when you're in your teens and you have this aspiration and everything you've kind of worked on, it feels like the end of the world. But it taught me a lot about identity. And I remember being, you know, 16 and just saying, you know, I will never identify with one thing ever again because I was so crushed. But life goes on, and sometimes it takes us a few opportunities to learn the lesson. So I went on, I went to university, which I planned to kind of delay to try and pursue this. And I just applied the discipline that I had. I worked full time during a degree. I did a 4-year degree in 3 years. I just wanted to get it done. I didn't really want to be there, but I came out and I still didn't know what I wanted to do. So I did a ton of different jobs based on opportunities and skill sets. And looking back, it was hard, but again, it gave me this great foundation where I have worked in so many different industries and I'm able to apply the knowledge from one to the other and to see how like learning one thing can help you figure out another. So fast forward, I basically ended up working in a marketing capacity for a team of surgeons. I went to school at night in marketing because I didn't have a background in that and worked on, you know, succession planning, business expansion, all kinds of things for them. Over that time of exploration, was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I was really good with numbers. I was super interested in things like psychology, how people think, which is what my minor, my undergrad is in, how people learn, how things work. But I was really quiet. I was actually really shy, and sports was where my leadership had developed, and it was one of the only places I was kind of like more front and center, and even then quite reticent. I was often put captain of my rugby team. I know I didn't want to be. And I think that's the other reflection I have is I was put there because I was actually quiet. I was someone who didn't want to be in the spotlight, but I was someone who wanted to make sure everybody felt welcome, included, aware of their role and what they needed to do. And so that's what we would kind of call servant leadership now, right? Like my success is making sure everyone else has what they need to succeed. So I went and did an MBA. So I did the marketing thing. It was great, but there was really nowhere to go. And I realized through all of this that actually I was fascinated with strategy and business. And I didn't really have a background. I mean, I had some economics and math, but I went and did an MBA in strategy and leadership and finance. And I came out during the housing crisis. Nobody was getting jobs. I had applied that discipline, right? I was just committed to overcoming the odds. I had people in, you know, leadership roles within the school who kind of told me like, have a plan B. You know, you're trying for the hardest jobs. They're not hiring right now. But I came out, I got a role in strategy consulting, and that was my dream. And I pursued that. I, again, worked myself to the bone. I fully identified with it, which I said I would never do again. And right. 10 years later, I had lived all over the world, which was another goal. And I found myself burning out, and I found myself with less purpose. And I didn't really know all of this at the time. In the moment, I just knew that like something had to change. And I didn't want the leadership kind of partner track that was being offered to me. So I left with no job lined up, not sure what I wanted to do. I sold everything. I became nomadic, and I gave myself three pillars, which was to feel connected, inspired, and healthy. And I went off and I figured it out. And I was sitting on the board of some startups, and I was volunteering with social impact consulting, and I was just trying to see what was out there. I partnered into one of the startups that I had sat on the board of, and subsequently co-founded some other startups. So I then did startup Alex, which turns out you work just as hard, no certainty, no stable paycheck, but I learned to take all of the learnings that I had from corporate life and really apply them to startup of different scales, of different contexts. And I saw the value of that. And I also saw that when you're in it, you're in it, and you can, it's really hard to be objective. And so I could only apply my knowledge so much within our company, but I was kind of helping a lot of other founders that we came across, you know, evenings, weekends, we were co-working. And I really, really saw the benefit of that and realized I could have a much larger impact if I was to focus on that rather than having our own organization. So my business partner and I successfully grew and sold our startups. And when we sold the last one, I did work as VP of the buyer for a while as part of the deal. That's how transactions often work. You have to stick with the business for a while. Yeah. But I started my advisory business. So I told you it was a little bit of a long story, but basically what I do now is I work with entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders, and I take the strategic, you know, planning, strategic growth, strategic thinking that I would say is one of my strongest capabilities, and I help them to implement that in their business and develop it for themselves. And then along the way, as we're figuring out, you know, where they want to go and what's the strategy to get there, we then drill down together on, you know, all the components of the operations. And usually there's a lot to do with team. There's a lot to do with some of the, you know, departments or choices or key people. But there's also a lot to do with you as a leader. Entrepreneurship brings up all your shit. I hope that's okay on this podcast.
That's fine.
It's whatever it is that you have as your insecurities or whatever, they're just going to be magnified. You're in a constant state of unknown, your hand dealing with other people. And it's really, really like the self-development course that nobody asked for. So along that path, if you don't focus on you, your role, and the self-awareness to become a really good leader, because I say leadership is actually not about managing other people, it's learning to manage yourself, then your business will outgrow you. And there's all kinds of issues that come from that. So that's how I became an entrepreneur in a couple of different ways.
Yeah, no, I love that. And honestly, it's funny because like people always have a different start on entrepreneurship, and I'm always curious to learn their stories. Like there's definitely some people who are, you know, more crazy, like, oh, I started selling weed in college and now, you know, and then,
well,
but yours,
you look back. And yeah, you but see, yours is like, I'm like, oh, I was figuring out how to do this like horse thing with without money. So I was like training for other people, training for kids who bought horses for their, or sorry, parents who bought horses for their kids that couldn't handle them. So I would do that. And then I'd have other people who had investors who had horses who needed help. So I was finding the way to like train and compete horses that I couldn't, buy, I couldn't do, and raise my profile and, you know, working. But I think then there was a long stretch where I actually didn't want to be an entrepreneur. The idea of having my own business and a team that I was responsible for, that I, you know, when you have employees, like, to a degree, you're responsible to ensure that, you know, they can support their families. And obviously, again, with leadership, there's things you work on and understanding what is and isn't your responsibility. But that terrified me, having the responsibility. Like, I didn't actually want my own business for most of my life career.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because, like, you know, growing up, there's always a duality of, like, what is entrepreneurship as a perspective, right? You could grow up in a household
where they keep telling you that entrepreneurship is hard, money doesn't grow on trees, and just find a job, stay in that job, get your social security, and that's it. And there are also households that are like, entrepreneurship is the only way out. So yes, get a job now, but like, save up for something, have a side hustle. I'm super lucky that my family is more of like the latter. My dad had a job all his life, and it actually really stressed and burnt him out. And I feel like it was a major catalyst of, you know, his illness until, you know, he unfortunately passed away from like a heart condition. But he's always wanted a business, and they've always put it in my head that having a business is a way out. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to either of those situations, but, like, you know, hashtag real talk, entrepreneurship is really not as we see it on Instagram or, you know, these.
No, I'm always saying, like, it is so much less sexy and more lonely than what we're sold in the media. And it's everywhere these days.
But
I think understanding, to your point, what you just said, though, understanding the influences on you is huge. You know, I look at entrepreneurs in my life and what they saw, and it shapes us, right? Yeah. And I kind of went middle road. So my parents, not initially, but in the long run, you know, both worked for the federal government in Canada, which is a very stable job. My parent, you know, my dad worked there his entire career, and he actually was able to retire really early with a pension, right? Like, nice. For so many people, that's the dream. My dad retired at 56.
Cool.
And my mom spent a while getting into the government, but then worked for the government for a huge stretch. And ironically, that pushed me the other way, because what I saw was two things. One, both my parents are diligent, hard workers who care. And they worked in an environment where they worked their asses off and worked harder than a lot of other people for no upside, for no real recognition. And I remember when I was consulting, my dad would call me like 11 at night, and I'd be like, are you in the office? This is a government job. Government is known for, like, you check in, you check out, like, meh. But no, he's there working hard. And he's like, yeah, but like, where are you? And I was like, I'm in the office, but I'm you know, in my 20s consulting, earning six figures, like, on my way to whatever I want. Like, yeah, I'm in the office. Why are you in the office?
Yeah.
Oh, and not that I think you shouldn't do that. My point is, it was a system where, you know, he was not rewarded differently than somebody who clocked in 9 to 5, didn't really give a shit, just, you know, did enough to not get fired. Right.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was like, I will never work for the government. I will work in private, where, you know, at least it is supposed to be a meritocracy. But the other side of it as well, you know, my dad retired at 56, but he is like, and this is a bit like me when I did my nomad thing, he's like busier than most employed people, because my dad's dream when he originally was starting, you know, that working part of career of your life, was to work in like, nature and conservation law. My dad ended up working for the federal tax department. So my dad, since retiring, has been the president of the Sierra Foundation, is like involved in like a dozen different nature conservancies, is advocating, and he's finally doing the thing he loves. Imagine doing an entire career without, and I don't want to say it wasn't fulfilled, because he did meaningful work and did really great work, but without being able to pursue what you love and what you think is important. And if you do want to make a difference in the world, which not everyone has to, but like if you do, not being able to do that.
Yeah, I think that, what I always also thought of is that there wasn't exactly a duality of like be a 9 to 5er and be boring, or be an entrepreneur and have an exciting life, right? It's not
Right.
that, right?
No.
It was more of my parents told me that, at the end of the day, most people are not entrepreneurs because it's hard. Like the people who make these decisions, some of them may not be aware of how hard it is, right? And that's why there's a statistic of 80%, 90% businesses close after in the first 3 years or something on the first year. It's not
For sure.
easy for sure. And the other factor to that is people's risk appetite, right? And so with that as a fact, most people will end up as employees. That's just a fact. But my parents also always told me that because this is a fact, you could become, if you really want to be an entrepreneur, you could become one of those business owners who can build a good workplace for these employees, these people who decided to be employees, and you can give them a much more meaningful life. And that really inspired me. That really inspired me. I'm
Yeah.
like, oh yeah, that's a different way of looking at it.
I love that. And I think you're touching on something that is kind of what I was trying to get to, but much more eloquently is like, know yourself, know what you want, what's important to you, right? And if you build a business around something that is important to you and hinges on skills that you excel at and/or that you can bring in partners to kind of flesh that out, you're in a much better place, right? And I'll side note, it's normal to fail, just like in everything. This is in business, it's a little more tied to like survival. So yeah, there are a lot of characteristics, and I would love to talk about that, that are kind of required to be a good entrepreneur. But I think also, seeing entrepreneurship as a way out is flawed, right? It's pitched as this solution to everything. And actually, it can exacerbate the problem,
True.
right? Like, if you're in your job and you're like, I'm not getting paid enough, and money stresses you out, and you hate dealing with people, and you're at work too much, and your home life is suffering, being an entrepreneur is not going to fix that, right? You're going to have financial instability for a while, possibly forever, depending on what you do and how you do it and how much you want to grow. Because to grow, you got to reinvest, which usually means emptying your pockets and putting it back in the business. You're going to be, you're going to go from having one job and people to like do other things and help you to having all the jobs and probably not really having many people. So you're kind of on 24/7. So you're going to be thinking about it. You're going to be more stressed out, and you're not going to be able to take more time to focus on home and relationship and whatever. And I don't say that as a black and white, because I help my clients do that. But it's not an innate part of entrepreneurship that just happens.
Yeah,
You have to
exactly.
cultivate that and really figure it out and have boundaries and communication and again, understand your strategy, right? Like, do you have the resources to go good and fast and supported, or do you not? And you're going to have to learn a lot and go slow and be really resourceful and scrappy and, maybe do it beside of something else that earns you money. Like, there's a lot of things to think about. And really, like, before you embark on leaving a job or investing in something, I think you have to choose entrepreneurship really consciously. And I think in the media, back to my, it's not as sexy and it's more lonely, I'm seeing a little bit more of it, but you got to follow the right people, right? And obviously, those people typically aren't paying for ads. And if you haven't found them, you haven't found them. And the people that are showing up on your feed, either because people are reposting their motivational quotes, or because these people are paying for ads, are people who want to sell you something, right? They want to sell you their 10-step course to
The
making
lifestyle, yeah.
the lifestyle and the 20K months. And like, I just like, I hate
Yeah.
this shit. I hate it.
I know, me too, because like now that I'm a little bit more mature in terms of business. I mean, I've been in business for 15 years now. I literally started my first business while I was in college, my flower shop, and now we have multiple locations and it's an actual, like, physical traditional business. When people tell me now, like, oh my gosh, I love your life. You can travel anytime, you can make money anywhere. But also, I'm like, yeah, have you seen me in my 20s? Like, I hustled in my 20s. I've been to a club less than 10 times the whole 10 years of my 20s because I just worked. And my parents passed away early, so I had to support my sisters. I just worked. This is why I got married at 34, because I just worked. So it's funny because, like, and then when people start realizing that, they start to ask themselves, can I do that for 10 years? For a promise of, I don't know, like being more free sometime in the future. Like, it's a huge risk. It's a huge risk. What made you become more comfortable with that, with taking that risk?
I think to your point, I mean, so I didn't do the grind in entrepreneurship, but I did the grind, right? I mean, I worked, I had 100 hour plus billable weeks in consulting, and there's a lot of non-billable work that happens. Right. I lived out of a suitcase. I lived wherever. I remember being on projects with clients where I literally slept in 90-minute shifts because I was up all night running financials, modeling, then sleeping, then getting up and explaining the models once clients were awake, and then back for a 90-minute nap, and then up for whatever my next, So, like, I may not have done it in the same in entrepreneurship itself, but like, I really did that grind. And I think,
You paid your dues.
Okay, fine. The first business that I partnered into like ended up being a success and we sold it. But I mean, I had, like, to your point, well over a decade. And if you look at consulting, we kind of say it's like 3x, it's like 10 years, like 30 in terms of what you see and learn. And then it still, every business takes time, right? Even this business, it took well into year two, and now, like well into year two to start to stabilize and coalesce the operation. So I think your question was what made me get over the risks. I think it was understanding myself more and knowing what drove me, right? And that's good and bad, right? When I left my consulting job, it was the first time I hired a coach, and she said something that I will never forget. She said, "Your superpower can be your kryptonite if you don't learn to control it." So, strategic thinking, analytical thinking, a brain that can scenario plan in the middle of a conversation and at the end be like, "Here's what you need," is great in business. It is what allowed me to succeed very early on and really have an output of such high volume and get so much done within the time. And then I put the extra time in. So it was like I was extremely efficient, but I also worked, double, triple amount of time of what is like an average work week. But constantly pushing yourself comes from somewhere. So when I understood that, that helped me understand like why. But also in your personal life, that kind of brain can absolutely exhaust you and derail you. So I really learned that. And then I also learned part of why I left consulting is I was doing bigger and bigger projects, but the type of projects and the difference it was making was less and less. So I realized that impact is what gets me out of bed, making a difference. So when I left consulting, I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to work in smaller organizations where people generally wanted to be there and were vaguely heading in the same direction, right? Like you were herding cats that were like kind of heading in that direction, as opposed to like people who were just completely working up opposite to each other. And I wanted to help grow more than fix. And I knew that I really loved making a difference and that that like really galvanized me and that I was able to put in the hard yards and feel good if it felt like there was purpose and impact. And so that helped me kind of just be excited enough and overcome some of the other things that, and I also went and I partnered into a business. So I wasn't alone. I wasn't starting from
That's
zero.
nice. Yeah.
So that was like a really like soft landing to, I mean, it wasn't a soft landing, but like in some ways it was a soft landing to entrepreneurship, that I wasn't like sitting alone in a dark room dreaming about something. I went in a partnership capacity to an a going concern.
Yeah.
I think the same thing, like I learned more and more through the like 3 or 4 years of doing that with Patio and Scana and the other companies. Again, I saw the opportunity for me to help others, you know, and I don't say this because I'm like some saint who wants to like, you know, like I like to get paid for what I do, but I also love what I do so much that like I probably would just do it for free if, you know,
Yeah.
life didn't cost. I saw the opportunity to help other people achieve their dreams. To ironically, one of the hardest parts of starting my very own business was being the face. Doing this a few years ago, I would never have believed it. I've always been the person who's like behind somebody, who's
Yeah.
behind another person, helping them get there. And then ironically, I started a business that allows me to do that for others, but then I have to be the face of my business. And it took time and it took practice, but it was dedication, because I knew that what I knew this is something I was amazing at. I knew that everything I had done up till here created it. And I love what I do, and I love having the honestly absolute privilege to choose who I work with, both in terms of, you know, my team and my clients. And I think I took a leap of faith, which came from a lot of personal development, which came from a lot of like hard conversations with myself and other people, and really realizing like, this is what I want to do, and I'm really good at it, and it's going to be hard, but I want this. And also, I know the lifestyle I want. And I also know that the other things I'm great at and would enjoy doing will not give me that lifestyle and will put me in a place where some of my natural tendencies create. Oh, like drive me to overextend myself, right? When I have a team of whether it's, you know, 15 or 30 or 50 or 100 people relying on me, I will overextend myself. I will constantly drive myself to make sure everyone has what they need and do the thing and cover the gaps and, you know, and I love that about myself to a degree, right? But I think one of the things I learned in entrepreneurship through very hard lessons is that, again, there are things that can make you great, but you have to understand yourself enough to have the boundaries and make decisions that don't put you in a position where those characteristics will lead to your downfall or to burnout or unhappiness, right? And, you know, I went through some really hard times in startup world, and one of the hardest times was realizing that both my business and personal relationships were showing some similar signs, and I was massively just overgiving and not having the right conversations and boundaries and caring more, so much more, and putting other people first constantly. That, you know, when, and there was a purpose to it, and I got the both the business and the personal relationship, I got them over the line, I got them to a better place, and I'm really glad I did. But I then made decisions and changes in my life that I applied to personal and professional to ensure that the next few years were going to be different.
One of my mentors told me before that every problem in business can always be traced into like a personal issue that you have. Like, for example, if you have a problem with your teammates, it could be maybe related to an issue of trust. Which is, you are shaped by your past experiences and things like that. And so it really, really investing in yourself and your personal state, and that is like your health, your mental health, your experiences, how you're growing. That is one of the things that I learned very kind of late into my, entrepreneurship journey, because it is very common. And you guys, if you're listening to this and you feel like you're doing something wrong, definitely not. But as soon as possible, that you could make an investment in these things. I know when you start your business, it's all about making money and it's all about the profit and making it work. But after a while, you you realize that you got to reinvest not just in the business, but in yourself as well. So in terms of expectation versus reality, can you give us, say, two examples of some of the harshest, slaps of reality that you got when you started or when you became an entrepreneur?
Well, I think what you just touched on is really vital. There's a reason why the average successful entrepreneur is like 45. It's because you have enough life experience. And you said you came into it late, but I mean, you started in college. Like, who is fully evolved and self-aware at that point, right? Like, there's a reason, not just business experience, but like life experience and sageness that comes with age for most people, not all. But I think that mile marker of like typical age of success, and by the way, successful business usually takes 3 years to be able to call it successful. So like if you're in year two and you're like not sure, hang in there, make good decisions, ask for help. But I think it's not just the experience, it is whatever life has brought you to have the self-awareness. So I guess expectation versus reality. There's two things that I thought of while you were talking, and if they don't fit this, I'll come up with a more personal example. But one is like the solopreneur is, it's not a myth, but like it is better together, right? There's some, I'm gonna misquote this, but it's like if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, right? Being able to work with someone else is, can be really hard, and you gotta really figure out that out, who is right. And I say good paperwork makes good partnerships. I honestly don't recommend working with friends unless you can really say that you have good communication and all that, because like best way to ruin a friendship. If you aren't both really like emotionally mature and able to separate things. But we, the media is all about, and it's usually a guy, right? This guy who like started at 20 and he built something alone and now he's a billionaire and let's put him on the cover of everything. First of all, anomaly, like one in probably a million plus, right? But that again, so what we see, right? It's the same reason why we see like 0.01 of like physiques on the internet and we think we all should somehow be able to look like that. Like, that person's an anomaly, but also they typically are, they have other people, that just the other people are more behind the scenes, right? And I think the second piece that's really related to that is like the personality, right? So that like lone wolf, that person who is like just kind of an asshole, right? Like, and I don't, maybe not, but like has a style that's not people friendly. Most entrepreneurs have done, have to do, and again, that's why often you're better later in life. They have to get to know themselves well enough to be like, what am I good at? And therefore, what should I be doing in the business? And what do I need some either objective guidance or just hands-on help with? And bringing people in the business to do that. Who's going to keep me in check? Who's going to help accelerate and elevate what I do? And they bring them in. And that is what you don't see when we're talking about, the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Elon Musk, and people are like, oh, you got to be this like, quirky, whatever dude who just makes it like, and like, no shade, they have made it. But, Elon Musk is famous for being a terrible communicator and terrible with employees and all of that. And like, that does impact in the business, of course, and he has still made it, but like there are tons of people that help manage that inside the business, right? And that's what you don't see. It's not talked about. So I think that's like that kind of like personality, solopreneur, age. Like the people you see on the front of magazines are not your average entrepreneur, and there are a million and one average entrepreneurs who have amazing lives and amazing businesses. I think the other thing is the sexiness part. You don't have to have some idea that someone has never done. Business, unsexy businesses make a shit ton of money.
Oh,
You need
yeah.
to figure out what is needed and how you can reach people either with something they're not having access to or a better way or a lower cost or whatever. And convince enough of them to do it and then grow your business from there. And again, you don't have to start something from scratch. There's so many alternatives to traditional entrepreneurship, which is growing a business from nothing. Franchises is buying a business with a blueprint that's proven. There's like 2 million businesses for sale in the US alone of people that don't have succession plans, like family businesses. So purchasing an existing business that is like proven to work and makes money from day one, that is like an amazing way. Honing your expertise to take a role in someone else's business, like I did. I then co-founded and started businesses and did that, but like you don't have to just like quit your job, set the parking lot on fire on your way out and then figure it out. Like that's just like not a good way. And that probably displays a level of emotional maturity that's not conducive to actually running a
Yeah,
business.
exactly.
So I think the reality versus expectation of like, I'm gonna have like a SaaS product that changes the world. That's not most entrepreneurs. Most entrepreneurs figure something out that is probably not sexy and is never gonna get them on the cover unless they really wanna be. Cause again, that's just like PR. It's just like whether you wanna be in the spotlight or
Ego,
not. They look at like Cody Sanchez is a great example, right? Like she's now front and center talking about things, helping people because she's chosen to be. But what she was doing, she could have stayed under the radar and been a, and I don't know if she's like a multimillionaire or billionaire at this point, and you would never have heard of her if she ch didn't choose that. And she has all kinds of like boring businesses.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something that also comes with age, like you said, because when we are younger, we are more I would just say this, we think less, right? So we look. This is why we choose like bad partners when we're younger. It's like, oh my God, he's hot. Yes, he's my boyfriend now. He's my life partner
I have
and
a
my
hot
whole world,
boyfriend.
right? Because I just want to have a boyfriend. So that's the problem with the age too, because like we just look, and it's the same as business. When I was younger, the business that I really wanted to do was actually like a boutique, like a fashion boutique. I wanted to sell clothes, and I thought it was like so fabulous, and like it was just so glamorous, to be in the fashion business, which is super opposite of what I'm doing now. And then as I grew older, I started different businesses. I was in event planning for a very long time, and that really helped me build like my operations chops. And now I'm in outsourcing. And I actually sat with myself and I'm like, it seems like I would be doing a business 10 years at a time. So, what is a common thread in all of these businesses, aside from the flower shop? And I saw that. When I did consulting, when I did event planning, the common thread was I love helping businesses grow. I love like helping brands grow. I love launching campaigns. I've always loved marketing. And the common thread was always helping businesses grow. And so that is how I had like kind of the aha moment of, oh, I'm going to position my outsourcing company to be like a growth focused, not just to do certain tasks. Like, in the Philippines, everyone and their mom has a VA agency. So I wanted to be like different. And, still to this day, people call me, oh, yeah, talk to Carla. She has a VA agency because it's the common thing. But I think the big expectation versus reality for me is like, I think number one, you don't have to stick to one idea or one business as you go. And number two, you have to really spend a lot of time kind of sitting with yourself and figuring out what you want to do, like what you said, intention. Because when I was younger, my expectation was I'll do the business that looks good so that when people look at me, they're impressed, right?
I love that you said that. I recently like frame I came up with this term, success on your terms, because the first thing I talk to my clients about is like, why are you doing this? And be honest, because honestly, you got to be honest with me so I can help you, but you got to be honest with yourself. And I don't give a fuck if you want to save the world or make a ton of money. Like, there's no judgment. But be honest. And I think to your point, so many of us are influenced by definitions of success that come from wherever we've picked them up in life. And actually, what is your definition of success? And so I say to clients, like, Why are you doing this? And then what do you want the business to achieve? And then what do you want your role and lifestyle to be? And then we build for that. But if you don't figure that out, you are going to put into your point 10 plus years of hard work, because you're going to put the hard work in no matter what.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up with a business that maybe you resent, that maybe doesn't do well because you can't show up the way the business needs, the way you built it. Because you weren't clear on how you wanted to like live your life, that holds you back from doing other things, or that just doesn't succeed. And so that sitting with yourself and defining your own version of success. And I mean, like, really define it, like really dig in and get specific about what you do and don't want to feel, to do, like all of that. I think it's so important. And if I think about, I'm very fortunate to have crossed paths with some very successful people in my time. And I think about, you know, I know a few billionaires, and I can think of maybe one that doesn't like just fully be like, I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have guidance, you know? And the one I'm thinking of who's like a little bit there, they're more like, I trust this person and that person, that's it. But like, even then, they still have a couple people that are there. Sounding boards that they you know, they know that they don't know everything. They know that they need people to like help question them, right? And I think this is something where, like, you know, part of how our friendship blossomed is like getting the right people around you. If you are surrounded by people who are doing, and I don't want to say more traditional lives, because entrepreneurship realistically is very traditional in some ways, and I think that's a nuance that would be a whole nother podcast. Like, in a lot of cultures, entrepreneurship isn't a choice. It's a necessity, right? But if you come from a more, you know, get a job, do this, blah, 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 and everyone around you is doing that. And it's the same thing with like personal life choices. You're always going to be fighting the tide. We're naturally evolved to fit in. So if you're surrounded by people who, you know, drink 5 days a week and don't really exercise and overspend and are constantly in debt, you're going to feel it's much easier to do those things than it is to, if your goals are opposite of that. And entrepreneurship is kind of the same, that if you really want to be like getting to know yourself and growing a business, then you need to be around people who are doing that too, and who are having those conversations, and who can sit and either have an uncomfortable conversation or hold space while you work something out. Therapy is great too. But, you know, you have to kind of, like you said, sit with yourself and get clear. And so even if you are paying for coaching and everything, I still think curating your social network is really important.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's actually super, still super underrated, because even though people know that famous quote of, was that you are the average of the five people you hang out with or something, I still see... The same people who are sharing that quote are still hanging out with the wrong people, which is like pretty
100%.
Funny, right?
And this is where life imitates work, right? Leadership, a big part of that is hard decisions, right? And communication and boundaries. And the same reason that if you're in, let's say, year three or four or five of your business, there may be people who were your day one diehards. They were there at the beginning. They were fundamental to your business. Maybe you're related to them or they're friends, but they're not the right person to take your business to the next level. And you have to have that. You have to know that, make the decision and have the conversation. It's the same reason people don't do that in their personal life. And if your business will stall if you don't do it, and your personal life and probably your business will stall if you're still hanging out with your college roommate that isn't growing in the same direction at the same pace.
Right.
It doesn't mean they have to be doing the thing you're doing, but they don't support it. If they aren't someone you can talk to, and you know, if they're a primary influence there, if they're those five people that you spend the most time with, it will change.
Yeah. People forget how malleable our morals, our thoughts, our influences could be depending on the people we hang out with. And this is why I've always been kind of a really strong advocate in like choosing where to live, right? I grew up in the Philippines. I have a very, very shitty passport. But as soon as I was able to get visas in certain countries, I just started going and searching for where I want to live and end up. And the other day I had a conversation with this like tax consultant. He does like international tax. And we were just talking about, you know, my business structure, whether I want to move to Dubai or Paraguay or whatever, set up a bank account in Panama, like all that stuff. And I'm like, what? That sounds very like not me. That sounds like, you know, a money launderer, but I'll listen. I'll listen. But he was, you know, he was presenting me options about like zero taxation places, but then it had requirements that you have to live here for X amount, or you can't be in one place for more than 6 months. And I'm like, hold on, hold on.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that for taxes. I want to live where I want to live. And if taxes come with that, then so be it. Because I've had that mistake before of kind of making, you know, making negotiations on things that should not be negotiated, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's also kind
your
of one
non-negotiables.
Thing, yeah, that come with maturity, I would say, in entrepreneurship. And another unsexy thing that we have to face, we do have to have our non-negotiables, especially little note, especially for women, because it's so easy for us to fall into the trap of people-pleasing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I could not agree more. And again, right, it's things that come up in your personal social life. They show up in your business also.
Yeah.
And I actually think your business is a great place to experiment with things, and vice versa. So if you're like, oh, I got to get better at this at work, like find a way, ask for some support in your personal life to practice it. But the same thing, if maybe actually the bigger issue is your personal life, then look for opportunities in your work and ask people to help hold
like
you accountable to flex and grow and start small. But it's, yeah, it's a big one. I do think, regardless of who you are, but to your point, probably more for women, you have to get really clear on your boundaries and get comfortable with not being liked at the same time as being self-aware, right? So it can't always be like, everyone's wrong. Like,
right.
No feed. I don't have to take any feedback. I am who I am. Like, meh. Like, to my point of like, those personalities are not typically the successful entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But it's also not, you can't try and please everyone. You know, it's like, if you're a flavor of ice cream, I heard this from somewhere. I think it was probably a book I read 5-6 years ago. So full credit. Nobody's favorite ice cream is vanilla, right? Mm-hmm. Be a strong flavor and be in integrity and be clear. And the people who love you will be your diehards and they will love you. And all you need is a small percentage to succeed. And then the rest is fine, right? You're not for those people.
Yeah.
But like, if you try to be vanilla, nobody hates vanilla, but it's nobody's favorite. Okay. And
right.
Don't come out. I'm sure somebody's favorite is vanilla, but you get the gist of the analogy, right? Like, you got to be comfortable with that. You got to set boundaries, because otherwise, especially in entrepreneurship, you'll overextend, you'll overgive, you won't be clear on who your ideal client is, which means you won't be as successful serving them or developing products for them, whatever kind of business you're running. So I think, again, like so much of what we're talking about is like coming back to realizing like entrepreneurship, a cornerstone of it is that personal development, that leadership, the self-awareness, the communication, the boundaries, like, and why it takes so long, right? Like it's kind of like life, right? It's about the journey. I will tell you, and there's a scientific definition for this, but you know, the idea that success never feels as good as we think it's going to feel.
Yeah.
And actually the pursuit of it is what kind of like gets us off. Like, and I will tell you, you know, the moment we signed and sold our last business was massive. I mean, we don't have time to go into it, but the journey to get there with COVID and unexpecteds and deals that fell through and like, you know, like it was wild.
Yeah.
The reality is like, it was exciting, but I mostly just felt relief, right? Like it wasn't,
really?
I wasn't out dancing in the street doing that. Like, but
yeah.
The process of getting there, that shaped me.
Yeah. I love that. I love this transition into, you know, we've been talking about the unsexy and the sad parts, and I don't want this to become a podcast episode to discourage people from entrepreneurship, but it is worth it, right? It is. There's something in there, and that's why people do it, even if it's hard. And I love that you even started by sharing your experience, like being an athlete. My parents were super focused on really emphasizing that we learned one and mastered at least one musical instrument and one sport. I also played a sport growing up and competed in table tennis. I know, hashtag super Asian, and can't be more Asian than that. and then, but yeah, I definitely hear you. It teaches you a lot, and it's a very, it's the same thing. It's difficult, but there's rewards after. And when you do it, when it happens, like when I won that trophy, you actually start thinking about all those times that you know, the late nights, right? The difficult parts, the times that my coach yelled at me, and you know, things like that. Yeah. So for me, the biggest reward is having peace. I think it's having peace that I will not deny comes with money, but having that peace of mind of, you know, just having things taken care of and not having to worry. I think that's, and being able to do that, not just for me, but for the people I love, even my freedom, which means that if my sister needs me, I can get on a flight and be there for her. Yeah. Even if, you know,
but that's your value, right? You sat down and you thought of, like, that's a big one for me. Freedom has been my top value most of my life.
Same.
And I wasn't always able to define it. I just kind of knew it. And freedom can sound really selfish, but for me, time and money to take care of the people in my life is fundamental.
Yeah.
That is what is most important to me. And it includes even having, so the way I've set up my business, the time and the money that, like, so the money that comes in from serving my clients, and I will only commit so much of myself to doing that I can also go work on social impact projects and not worry about the time I'm spending or whether there's any compensation. That's a value. That's freedom, right? You could hear freedom and it can mean a million different things to you. The freedom to live where I want, to your point, to surround myself with the people that I want to be around, but also to be able to pick up and go if people in my life need me, or to help them through a hard time. Those are fundamental values for me, and they shape how I set up my life and how I run my business. So I think that that's so, so, so important. And you mentioned something too about, you know, the hard work. I think, and I'm sorry if I'm filling this with things for people to Google, but honestly, like, go for it, because type 2 fun is a concept I learned about years ago. There's type 1 fun, which I think I'm going to simplify this. Please do Google it, because it's fascinating if you're like a curious person. Type 1 fun is kind of like pleasure in the moment, right? So it's a lot of what we're going to see on social media these days, right? It's a lot of what people are going to say, like, oh, if you're an entrepreneur and you can like party, or you can go do this, or you can do fun things. Type 2 fun is the things that are the stories you tell later. Type 2 fun is it's the time you went on a biking tour and it was 8 hours in the rain and your foot blistered, da, 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 and all of these things. Type 2 fun was hiking out of Burning Man through knee deep mud and thinking we weren't going to make it.
Oh,
but it created bonds, and it reminded me. And ironically, I read The Comfort Crisis right before going.
Oh, I love that book. Yeah.
Such a good book. So
I just finished it.
I don't think they call it type 2 fun in there, but it's that concept of like actually difficult, hard things we do to achieve something. Those are core memories, and they are things that they're kind of like our war stories, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying every hard thing you go through is type 2 fun, but you know, we have a hotel up on Holbush, and hey, the weather and the roads recently have been real hard, and there have been times where I am on my bike in thigh high puddles, and or I've gone by the beach and I have had to like drag my bicycle through waves, and I'm just like, these are memories. And I'm just, you know, I could sit down and have a cry about it and talk about how frustrated I am and life is unfair, but because of who I am and how I am, I'm like, this is fucking wild, ridiculous. Oh my God. But like, we just get through it. And I think the Comfort Crisis, again, shout out recommendation. Everybody should read that. It is a reminder of how important it is to do hard things so that we remember we can do hard things so that we have the mental and physical fortitude to pursue what we actually want and have purpose and achieve in life. And maybe that's a little deep, but I actually think it's a really good summary of what we've been talking about and the characteristics you need to be an entrepreneur, the tenacity, the curiosity, the problem solving are not just innate. They are also about how you foster them and what you can do to build resilience and all kinds of things. Like, I think that's more the message I want to get across. I don't think entrepreneurship is for everyone, but not because I want to exclude anyone. It just needs to be a conscious choice that you plan for and prepare for and are willing to commit to do the work to be able to succeed at it, not just financially, but and be happy. And happy isn't, again, happiness is not pleasure 24/7, but it is knowing that you're aligning with your values, you're in integrity, the things that are important to you, you're able to do.
Oh, I love that. My favorite metaphor for that is also like cooking. When you're cooking something, especially when you're cooking a new dish, you're like reading the ingredients, you're making sure everything is measured correctly, you're unsure of yourself, and then you're thinking about the person you're serving it. Will they like it? Is this even worth my time? I have to wash after. But you're making it out of love, and then you're really doing your best. And then it takes you maybe 1 hour to chop and to cook. That's probably minimum. And then you serve it, and then that moment you're watching, I don't know, your husband try that dish for the first time, right? You're just like sitting there. And then in that moment, you think about all of your efforts, and then you realize even if they like it or not, it is worth it because you've learned some things. Oh, maybe these two ingredients don't go together. Maybe I shouldn't have boiled for that long or something. And if you enjoy the process and you know that there are other ways to learn from it and to gain from it, I think that's like the repetitive lesson in entrepreneurship, because the difference is you're rewarded with money, which is really nice. And then the longer you are in it, the shorter time it also takes to make a gain, right? Like,
That compounding momentum, I
exactly.
think, is I get
Exactly.
another thing, right? Like
Yeah.
it's hard at the beginning. I'm like, it's just not
Oh,
sugarcoat
yeah.
it.
You have to
It's
hustle.
hard. And you know what might happen, which what happened to me? I actually took off really quickly and then I left my job. And then business got hard and life got hard. And like the first 6 months were amazing. And then the next year was really freaking hard. But I put the work in and I showed up. And then there's some moment, and maybe it's not this way for everyone, but there's some moment where all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's working. And then to your point, the increments of time of like it's working and then the next thing's working and then the next thing's working, they start to come faster. And it doesn't mean you won't have a dip, but yeah, like it takes time to build momentum. And it's why I love fitness analogies for business.
No, I love that. True, true. So there are so many things that you have to do. Okay, well, what as a kind of like a finale or a closing message, what would you like to share to people who are, thinking of exploring entrepreneurship, becoming entrepreneurs, or even maybe, whether it's like a kid on his gap year or a corporate guy who wants like a switch in his life? What is like your best advice for these people?
I think I would, I've thought almost like there needs to be like a checklist. So the first thing is, to your point, sit with yourself. What do you want out of life? What lights you up, right? This is kind of the zone of genius thing I talk about. Like, what are you good at that is, can advance a business and that you can just do and is really enjoyable and it gives you energy, right? That you kind of get lost in it. Like, really get clear on what you love, what you're great at, what you're not good at. And that's self-awareness. There's 100 things online that can help you. But also ask some people that are close to you for some objective feedback, right? Like, do a little poll. So really sit down and think about what you want out of life. Great. Then I would say talk to entrepreneurs. go talk to people who are doing it and are at different stages so that you can get a sense. You know, the best way to learn is from other people's mistakes. But make sure you're clear on you first, because otherwise you're really influenceable. So get really clear, get some ideas around what you'd want to do, what's important to you. You know, is financial stability really important to you? Cool. Then you're going to need to go about it in a unique way. Go talk to other entrepreneurs and see what's out there. Maybe even like go to events so that you can find peers and start to build that social network of mm-hmm. people who are doing it or considering it. And you're having conversations. Like there's an element of like zeitgeist that you kind of need, like in your zealousness. Like if you're going to make a big life change, you kind of need to be obsessed with it.
Yeah.
If you're kind of half-assed about it, like, nah.
That's true. And you know, this is another principle that I also want to share. So you can't just half-ass it, but also there, someone shared this that I thought was really meaningful. They always say that your results will be behind your efforts, meaning you could be you could be excellent and your results are outstanding. You could be outstanding, right? And your results are great. You could be great, your results are good. You could be good and your results are mediocre, mm-hmm. and so on, right? So yeah. It's not all, your effort is not always equal to the result. Sometimes you could also get lucky, but that's actually rarely what happens. It's always behind. And this is why you need to really put like your 200%. And aside from that, you know that every morning you wake up, someone is probably awake earlier than you, already doing the work, right? Yeah. And maybe they're hungrier than you. And maybe they come from a poorer background than you, and they really want to make this happen.
Yeah, and you've got to commit. So it's you got to do enough analysis up front and then commit to test it. Because that's the other thing we see all the time is like idea, 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 but you don't fully test it. So I use this with my clients all the time. Mm-hmm. What is the metric of the change or the implementation of the project or whatever? And then what is the metric of the result? So I'll give you an example. You want to change your operating expenses. So you look at all your suppliers and you change maybe how you use goods to reduce the volume, but you also negotiate the price with your suppliers. Great. Creating the process, changing, training your team, having the conversation with your supplier. Let's say you can do all of that within 2 weeks. Cool. You have done the project, but the savings will roll out over the next year because you will use less and you will spend less per unit. That savings will only be realized in 12 months. If you were to look at it per year, or if you were to say per month, but usually the big number is like, what's our per year savings of this initiative? Are we going to do it? And so it's very similar when you want to implement something. If you start to implement a marketing campaign, there is the decision, strategy, design, and rollout, but then the results flow in over time. And I think that's where you have to do enough thinking up front, do enough analysis of yourself or your idea or whatever, but then be ready to commit, monitor, tweak, monitor. Of course, you have to change and pull the plug sometimes and start over on something. But if you're finding yourself just changing tactics every 2 months fully, like you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah. No, I love that. Well, that's definitely, it's kind of a lot to digest, but
we like, covered a lot of ground.
TLDR, entrepreneurship is hard, but it's worth it. Be here all in or not, right? So Alex, thank you so much for all of the wisdom that you shared. I'm sure that a lot of people would be super curious to know what you're up to and where they can follow you, where they can learn from you, and maybe even how to work with you. So can you share with us how they can find all these amazing tidbits of wisdom?
Absolutely. The easiest place to go is my website. It's really easy. It's www.alexsnider.com. And pretty much everything is there. You can sign up for my newsletter. You can find my podcast, articles I've written, interviews, variety of things. Pretty much everything is there. But you can also follow me on LinkedIn, where I do lives. All my podcasts, you know, you'll know when they're released. I put info there My goal is to provide value. Not everyone is going to work with me, is ready to work with me. I want you to at least have the info. Most people need some help implementing it, but I love to put it out there. So it's a great place. And if you want to see more just like videos, I have a YouTube channel. All of these are linked within there. So it's really easy. And if you're a little more curious about the personal side, or you love, you know, the inspo of someone who goes to the gym almost every single day, Instagram is more global travels, gym, day-to-day stuff, lots of dog spam. So you can jump on there. It's as yet unknown on Instagram because Perfect. I think evolution, we're always evolving. So.
Oh, I love that. So meta. As yet unknown. Is that my gender? I'm just kidding.
So well, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I had such a great time. And I'm also like, yeah, we could be having like this conversation just any day, right? So it's good that maybe other people can learn something from it. And for everyone who's listening, don't worry about having to write everything down. I'm going to link in the show notes everything that Alex shared so you guys can follow her and see what she's up to. Thank you so much, guys, for sitting with us. Feel free to, you know, send me a message on Instagram or have a reply on this like Spotify episode. I think you guys can do that now. We'd love to hear what you think and share your thoughts. And yeah, if you have any other suggestions for topics or maybe even a follow-up episode with Alex, we're super down. We're super open. Thank you so much and see you guys next week for another episode of None of Your Business. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.